Welcome to Speed to Contract, Speed to Market, the show where thought leaders share their vast experience and new possibilities for expediting the government contract process. It's never been more critical for acquisition to become faster and more efficient. Our nation's security and freedom depend on it. Here's your host, Tim Templeton.
I am pleased to welcome to the podcast today the Honorable James Gertz, known to most as Hondo. Over three decades of leadership in the national security sector, Mr. Gertz has been recognized for his abilities to rapidly field emerging technologies, create and scale innovative solutions, inspire teams, and develop diverse talent. He is a proven leader in the most challenging and complex situations. Currently, Mr. Gertz is the Distinguished Fellow at Business Executives for National Security, where he provides strategic oversight for their pioneering work related to shaping the nation's future industrial base. Hondo also serves as the chairman of the National Security Advisory Board for Sierra Space, vice chairman for Sarcos Robotics, and serves on several other boards of innovative firms. Prior to his retirement from government service, Secretary Gertz performed the duties of the Undersecretary of the Navy, the department's number two civilian, with responsibility for the effective global operations of the over 1 million person, 200 billion U.S. Navy and Marine Corps team. From 2017 until 2021, after his presidential appointment and unanimous Senate confirmation, he served as Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, and Acquisition. As the Department of Navy's most senior acquisition official, he was responsible for a $140 billion annual budget and ensured the effective procurement and sustainment of the platforms, systems, technology, and services to enhance the capabilities and readiness of the sailors and Marines serving around the globe. Throughout his military and civilian careers, Mr. Gertz's contributions have been recognized by numerous private and public institutions that include twice earning the Navy Distinguished Public Service Medal and Presidential Rank Award. On a personal note, Hondo is married to his high school sweetheart, Dr. Kelly Gertz, and they are the parents of two adult sons. Hondo, welcome to the podcast.
Awesome to be here with you, Tim, and all your listeners.
Excellent. Well, you know, we had a chance to talk about this whole topic, Hondo, of speed to contract, speed to market. And you have an interesting perspective based on your body of work. And when I asked you, thinking in your past, what was the most effective time or event where you were able to implement new insights for speed to contract? And your response was different than others. And what I really liked about it, in all seriousness, was this is based on your experience, what you actually performed in the positions that I just outlined for our listeners. So from that, kind of give us your perspective on how you look at, you know, change, our whole acquisition, government oversight, and what we need to do to change and have done in the past and how you see it.
Great to be here with you and talk about this very interesting topic. And kind of as we discussed, I can be a bit of a contrarian in this whole debate, because I don't think the real issue is getting another authority or creating a new process or creating a new regulation. In my experience, both, you know, leading acquisition in the Air Force and U.S. Special Operations Command during most of the war, and then for the Navy Marine Corps team, you know, a couple things when I saw real transformational change kind of stood out to me. And I would kind of characterize it as having a laser focus on the mission. Too many times bureaucracies get caught up measuring activity and not outcome. And so when you're really focused on the mission, it's about achieving outcomes. It's not of, you know, it's not, did I have, you know, did I spend a lot of time on the process, or it's about, did I deliver something relevant to the field in a time frame that was relevant? And then to get there, you've got to have somewhat of an abundant mindset. Now, thanks for the long bio intro. I would kind of characterize it as I went in the Air Force pre-Desert Storm, jam, speed, conflict, getting stuff to the field was fast. I went to SOCOM right after 9/11, same thing. And I went to the Navy Marine Corps as we kind of made this specific pivot. And so, you know, whether I go to where trouble is or trouble follows me, you could probably debate. My wife gave you some perspective on that. But, you know, in those situations, you've got to have a mission focus. And again, it's not about following a process for following a process sake. It's about delivering mission outcomes. Now, again, there's places for process in that. The second thing you got to have is an abundance mindset. And too many times we get caught up in a scarcity mindset of you're concentrating on what you don't have as opposed to maximizing what you do have. And third is you build, you value, and you exercise a broad network and not just a network with the people you normally associate with. If you put those three together, what that always equates to me is learning velocity, right? How fast can you learn? How fast, you know, I'm not that smart. I'm a hell of a poacher. I will steal from anybody. And we just got out of Christmas. You know, I like to remind people the artificial Christmas tree was invented by a toilet bowl brush company. And all they did was take the toilet bowl brushes and stack them up, right? Because if you can start where somebody already has gone, you don't have to wait for the time to invent things. And so I think you put those three things together, you can do amazing things. I did first at SOCOM. And again, I mean the team at SOCOM. We had an issue with the standard issue, contract bandwidth. How can we get stuff to the field faster? And in about a 4-year period, we were able to double output how much we could get on contract. And we did there with about half the amount of people we had and about 20% less contracts. And then I got, you know, the great opportunity to lead the Marine Corps and Navy acquisition team. And I wanted to try the experiment again. And in that case, in less than 4 years, we went from $75 billion a year on contract to $150 billion a year on contract with 20% less contracts and, you know, maybe 10% less people. And the really interesting thing in all of that, we didn't have a golden process. We didn't invent something new. I didn't have to go get a new congressional authority. We just really kind of got, again, focused on mission outcomes, on learning velocity, on building and energizing a great network, and then having abundance mindset, focusing on maximizing everything we had.
So many before you have talked about the frustrations of working at the top and working, you know, trying to get through this mentality of bureaucracy, but yet you were able to do that. And I know, look, your background, you're a soldier, you're a can-do. I mean, I'm looking at your wake up, kick ass and repeat in the back, and I believe it. And the point is your body of work says that. What were come, you know, and I know when you talk about an abundance mindset, totally understand that, you know, and, you know, you laid out in a previous conversation, your three D's of what it really takes to have that focus and be mission central to accomplish what you're trying to get to. But what are some of the big takeaways, if you're talking to other leaders that would like to be able to duplicate doubling your awards with 20% less contracts and 10% less people, what are some of the highlights specifically in that you were able to rise above and lead the team to be able to accomplish that?
And again, the team accomplished that. I maybe facilitated it, and every once in a while, put my 18-inch neck to good use to remove some obstacles. I think the first thing is you've got to create a culture of trust in the organization. And you've got to talk about and think about things like risk in new ways. We often talk about we want to take more risk. Bureaucracies never like to take risk. That's not what they're designed to do. And the answer isn't generically, we should just generically take more risk. And so some of it is actually as a team figuring out how to better allocate resources to the risks you have. Because at the end, we all have finite resources, right? Every person listening to this, you only have so many hours in a day. You only have so many dollars. You only have you know, so many things you can apply to it. But the challenge is if you don't think about risk in the right way and that you don't allocate risk appropriately, you'll put too many resources on the things that don't have risk. And you'll actually, as an organization, be taking much more risk because you're going to starve them from the things that really have a lot of risk. And so, you know, I often talk about the four D's, which I use at SOCOM and I use in the Navy and Marine Corps. You know, and the first element of that D is massively decentralize your organization, right? To the, and I'm going to say it's to the lowest capable level, right? And so capability means both training, right, and trust and accountability. And so as a leader, you've got to trust your organization. At Special Ops, we used to say, trust till it hurts, right? If you aren't uncomfortable with the amount of trust you're giving somebody, you're probably not trusting them enough, right? And trust people, even if they don't look like you or have the same color skin as you or have the same gender or came from the same service or whatever the thing is, right? If you can create that element of trust in your organization, then you can massively decentralize your organization. If you can massively decentralize your organization, then you can get, you know, instead of 1 + 1 = 2, you start doing multiplication. And that's where you start to get these exponential returns. The second piece is you've really got to differentiate the work. Bureaucracies love to pick one way to do everything. I think when I left SOCOM, we had 7 different pathways or ways we could acquire something. So then you decentralize, you empower people, and then you give them lots of tools, and then you hold them accountable for picking the right tool or do the right job. You know, we often talk about anybody who's a woodworker has dealt with a sawzall. It does every woodworking function very poorly because it tries to do everything, right? Bureaucracies do that. And so, you know, pick lots of different ways to do something, and then, you know, people will be a lot more willing to try things if you give them a bunch of different tools. And you focus on learning. Sometimes you learn because it didn't work. Sometimes you learn because it worked and other people got to go there. So, you know, we can talk through the four D's, but those first two ones really let you power up an organization. I mean, and get back to this abundance thing. We talk about in the Navy, we don't have enough people. We don't have enough money. And we had $150 billion to put on contract and 130,000 people. That sounds like a lot of stuff to me, right? And so rather than focusing on what we don't have or what somebody could do with people or bodies they don't have, I would always encourage folks, what are you doing to maximize what you can do, right? Yeah. If we all have to invent something, it's going to take a heck of a long time. The Air Force at the time was doing some great, Cameron Holt, I think, has been one of your guests. They were doing some great stuff in Sivers. That's great. I'll just steal it. Why would I want to try and invent a competitive thing? I'll take that and we'll go focus on an area that has another need. And so you've got to get this humility that you don't have to be the one to solve every problem.
Speed to contract, speed to market.
We talked about the four D's, and I know we're not going to spend a lot of time on it, but you covered the first one of being able to decentralize and differentiate. Go ahead and just give us the other two.
So the last two are not as digitize the work, get people focused on where you've got to make judgment, where humility plays a good part, where there's interconnectedness, and get people out of work that doesn't take advantage of the human. And then the final one is develop talent, not because it's last, because it's the underpinning one. We could do hours of podcasts just on developing talent. But if you don't give a people chance to try and learn and go there, you're never going to develop talent, because they're always waiting to be the one to make the decision versus learning from making the decisions early on. You know, I tell folks, I want you to, you know, you making a 10% mistake on a $100,000 decision, I can afford for you to learn from that, even if you make the wrong decision. I kind of don't want you to make a 10% miss on a $10 billion program. But if you don't learn how to make decisions early on, back to this decentralization, we don't actually train people on how to make decisions until they're at a point of making decisions where getting it right is, you know, very, very important. And that's just not the way to develop talent. Mm-hmm.
you're taking, you know, the last 4 years of work, you brought that same mentality, right, over and redid the project again. And just thinking out loud, I mean, you doubled your productivity in terms of what you awarded in terms of contracts on an annual basis. You did it with 20% less contracts, and you did it with 10% less personnel. Think for a moment, and I want our, if our listeners would think for a moment, if we were able to take just those stats and bring it across what we're doing on everything, what the exponential change and improvement that we could have going through. So this isn't a one-off. I mean, it's a point. This is something that, you did through two different tours. I want you, if you just unpack, you shared something with myself and Charlie Williams in the conversation that I just loved. I wrote it down. It was like one of those through lines where you said, I actually was able to award a multi-billion dollar contract, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and did it without an RFP or without a proposal. Now, just kind of unpack that for our listeners, and let's talk about how we might be able to duplicate that process and some of the key underpinnings.
And again, there's maybe two lessons in this story. The first lesson is actually one of learning. And so for all the PEOs in the Navy and the Marine Corps, the first thing I would rate them on in their performance was they had to have a major initiative that had at least a 50% chance of failing. And you'd say, well, I don't know, why would you do that? Don't you want everybody to be 100% successful in everything they do? If all I rate you on is what you're successful in doing, and if all you rate yourself on or all you rate your team on is what's guaranteed success, guess what? You're always going to do the same thing. And as an organization and as individuals or teams, we're not going to learn. Now, again, judgment is authorized and encouraged here. And so, you know, so part of this was teaching ourselves how to learn fast. Sometimes that meant by trying things that had a high chance of failing so we could learn from them. And so one of those things, one of the PEOs on the shipbuilding side said, you know, we're in the middle of multi-year. We built a lot of these submarines. We think we'd like to try and award a multi-year submarine contract without doing a proposal in RFP. We all have the same data. We all know what everything costs. We know what we want. They know how to build it. Why are we going through this 2-year dance and wasting a bunch of time and overhead? They tried it and it didn't work. It failed. Now, what we didn't do was say, okay, you idiots, why did you try that and fail, right? We said, wow, tell us about it. And we once a month got all the PEOs together, we'd share things that worked and didn't work. For this reason, that reason, the timing wasn't right. It was a big, we were making some design changes, whatever the right reasons. Well, the aviation guys were in the room. They heard the same thing. And they said, well, we're in lot 42 of F-18s. We just awarded an F-18 contract not too long ago. We're going to try this on F-18s for a 3-year multi-year. Again, multi-billion dollar contract. We have all the data. They have all the data. And in about 3 weeks, they sent an offer to the contractor and said, here's what we'd be willing to pay for 3 years worth of F-18s. Contractor came back and said, that's awesome. We'll sign up to that deal. And in about 3 weeks, we had that. Normally, an 18-month to 2-year process. Now, think of all the money we saved on the government side by not having to do all that work. Think of all the money we saved on the contractor side who could apply all that overhead now to doing new interesting things. And we got the best deal we have ever gotten on a 3-year multi-year contract on aircraft in that situation. So again, there's some great learning there. Now, would I apply that to everything? Absolutely not. Is it another kit, tool we ought to have in the kit bag? Absolutely. Did I have to go to Congress to do that? No. Did I have all the authorities? Yes, we did. We just had to decide to use them.
A big part of this is education. I mean, it's when you get the person with the body of work that's speaking from the center of their experience, that's when we're all leaning in to listen, right? You know, as we go forward, how can we take the lessons that Hondo and his team and others that he's affiliated with and incorporate it in our divisions, incorporate it for what we can do going forward? How would those leaders access and What are the things that you would recommend or advise?
Yeah, maybe I'm going to answer this in maybe two groups of thought. The first group of thought is, before you ask for something you don't have, really challenge your thinking that you've thought about. Have you maximized all the things you do have? Have you really empowered the folks on your team? Are you truly leveraging all of the diversity you have on your team? Right? Have you created there's a little bit of a misnomer to be a transformational or innovative leader. You have to actually be transformational or innovative yourself. And I think that's hogwash. There are a bazillion people much more innovative and transformational than I am. But as a leader, you have to enable some of that. You have to create the conditions that are doing that. And that's not normally by reorganizing or trying to come up with a gimmick process or something like that. So the first thing I would say is beware of gimmicks. Leverage everything that's available, but don't wait for the golden process or something to solve the problem. If you've got a great team that you've developed that trusts each other, the process won't matter. And if you don't have a great team that trusts each other, the process won't matter, kind of thing. There's certainly places where you can use some of those process techniques, but we kind of hide behind those. And then at the individual level, I would say, there's three kind of core traits to really either focus on it yourself or at a team level. The first is, do you have curiosity? Do you have the curiosity to explore? Are you getting out of your silo? Have you figured out what your teammate next to you is doing? Have you figured out what the Air Force is doing that you might be able to steal, or an ally, or got an idea from industry? It's great that as a senior leader, people come talk to me. I don't have all the right ideas. My ideas can be outdated. So don't just listen to just the most senior people. There's plenty of good ideas everywhere. But you've got to be curious. And if you don't spend a little time being curious to explore, you'll kind of never learn things. And then the second piece is really having the humility then to learn. And you can explore, but if you just discount it because it's not what you think or how you were brought up, that doesn't do you much good. So, if you have those first two elements, you're in pretty good shape. And then the third, I would say, is you've got to have the boldness to act. Just go, don't take walks. Go out and swing, right? And that's why I say I'm a little bit of a contrarian, because I found if you can get that mindset into the team, at the individual level, at the team level, at the program level, then you start illuminating all these opportunities to do things a little differently or do things a little faster or try something new or whatnot. And the other nice thing about that is, then when the old has-been like me walks out the door, you don't start all over again, because now it's in everybody's DNA. It's in their culture. And then you stop looking for heroes, right? And now you're just mission focused, getting the job done. And then everybody who comes in after you contributes and goes. So, don't look for the gimmick or the hero as much as some of these more basic core tenets. Now, you do that at scale across the size of our whole team, industry, startup, venture capital, government. Mm-hmm. Holy moly, that's why this country is great, because that's what we do. We don't over-centralize planet and pick one perfect way to do everything. But we've got to unlock that true potential in the country. And for the last 20 to 30 years, we've had the luxury of being complacent. That doesn't mean at the individual level, at the country level. And we're just not going to win. And I hate losing. Right? I hate losing. So, we've got to get past all this stuff. And with a good mission focus, that can overcome some of the, challenges we all have as humans. That's just naturally being part of a human, ego and all that other kind of stuff. We really get mission outcome focused. I've seen it in multiple services and multiple situations. Really amazing things can happen.
Trust someone till it hurts. And I had an interview with a guy a long time. He was mentored, and his boss was David Packard from HP. And I asked him the question. I said, what was the single biggest thing that David Packard shared with you or advised you to do in your career working with him? And he thought for a long time. He was an engineer. He took an extended amount of time to think about it. But he said this, he said, what Packard taught me to do was to hire and develop people that were smarter and better than me. And then he looked at me and said, do you know how hard that is to do? He said, it goes against our human nature. But he said, it's the single biggest reason I was able to move up into the senior ranks of HP because of that single piece of advice that he gave. And when you start talking about trusting people until it hurts and putting people in positions to fail, and I love the idea of having projects and what their value or evaluated on is based on projects where they have a 50% failure rate. And again, good judgment is always encouraged, right? And you've laid some really good details and steps moving in the right direction. But final thoughts for those people that are listening that, number one, are doing self-evaluation. Number two, are not looking for the silver bullet, right, or the hero. I like that. But really looking for a process to move and move the bar up and bring the team along with them. I mean, what some final
yeah,
thoughts?
I mean, maybe two quick war stories. Because I don't want everybody to think I was, you know, you're born enlightened into this or you went to the right school or something. You know, I was a knucklehead second lieutenant. I showed up my first job. I'm there a week. The major I was working for is gone somewhere. So I have this package to get a decision. I walk into the colonel who happened to be an old Strategic Air Command guy. And I said, hey, colonel, Lieutenant Joe Bagadonas here. I got this decision. I'd like your advice. Here's what I'm kind of thinking. And he looked at me and he starts asking me about my background and did I get a college degree? Did I really get commissioned? I thought he cared about me for a little while. And then I found out, you know, about 5 minutes into it, he goes, so we were dumb enough to send you on a scholarship and then commission you. And you're not smart enough to make this decision or confident to make it on your own. Tell me why I need you in my Air Force. That was as a second lieutenant. Right. That was OK. Learning point number one. Right. Again, it wasn't a grand process. It was OK. I got it. And then a little later, as you mentioned, married to my high school sweetheart, two kids. We were really struggling. They had some developmental challenges. I was working late and get a little frustrated. The boss comes out and my wife, you know, had mentioned, hey, you know, we got some challenges here. Came in the next day, my boss is kind of, again, seeing me moping around a little bit, keeps asking me what was going on. I said, I don't know. Finally, he calls my wife at home, finds out, you know, we got some challenges. And she said, well, you know, it's like you can get home for dinner. That would be really nice, not working so late. So he comes and hands me a set of orders that I have to be at home by 6 o'clock every night or I'm going to get an Article 15 and thrown out of the Air Force. What both of those taught me early on, and I was uncomfortable trusting people, empowering people, inspiring people. It wasn't that I had some great divine, read a book. This was pure survival on my standpoint. Any success I've had was because I was forced to learn that perhaps earlier than others. And then I just got a lot of practice at it. So I got very comfortable. And so what I tell everybody out there, right? Curiosity, humility, boldness, and really look for the good in people, encourage the good in people, and then again, hold them accountable, but trust them, give them a chance. Don't, and again, particularly if they don't think like you or don't look like you or aren't your best friend or anything else like that. We do that as a team, whether that's industry, whether that's small business, startups, within the government. This country can continue to do the amazing things it's always done. If we don't, We're not gonna get where we need to get. And I appreciate you having a podcast like this with the great array of guests that you brought together here to have this discussion so we can learn from each other and move forward.
That's right. You've heard it straight from Hondo. And I've got to tell you, on a gut level, Hondo, the lessons and just the stories and your experiences, they're inspiring. And if you're not inspired, if you're listening to this and you're not inspired, you don't have a chill running down your back on what you can do in your own position right now by taking the simple advice and going to the next level, then, you know, I don't think you have a pulse going on.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know.
I would just, my last final thought, don't confuse leadership with a position in an organization. I purposely, in any org chart I ever had, put myself at the bottom. You as a whatever you are in business, wherever you are in an organization, you can actually affect change more at the lower level than at the more senior level. So don't wait for permission. Don't wait till you get to the next grade. Don't wait till you make the next box on the org chart to get after things. And you'll be a lot happier. And my guess is you will drive a lot more outcomes for your organization with that mindset.
Well said. Well said. Well, Hondo, we appreciate it. I look forward to continuing the conversation and trust that when that opportunity comes, you'll take the time to join us again.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Jim.
All right. Have a great day. Take care.
See live discussions of this fascinating topic at the Government Contract Pricing Summit in June. For more information and registration, visit gcpsummit.com.